up in her, throw up the sex in her.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello, hello, and a happy Thursday to you. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. It is 2:09, the sun is shining, and Chris, it's actually warming up out there. Quite pleasant. This morning, chilly, wintry, and now quite pleasant in the sun. We've got sunshine. It's going up to a high of 13 degrees.
It's a little dicey trying to dress the kids early in the morning, right? You're like, all right, what do we do? Do we wear toques? Do we like?
How many layers do we get involved here?
Do we put like boots or like? But you know, no, it's true, right? Like with Horse Ali, she was like, oh, I want to wear my sneakers. All right.
Well, you'll be able to wear them by 3 p.m. Okay. By 3 p.m., it'll be much warmer, and it's already going up out there. Right now, 8 degrees. The high is 13 today. Tomorrow, a chance of showers, 16 degrees, 15 on Saturday. So it's gone down considerably from what they were calling for yesterday. It sounded more like in the 20s. It's pretty typical April weather, wet and muddy, a kind of weather where if you're me, you're cleaning off the dogs every 5 minutes when they come in from the backyard, and your house is a bit of a mess. On the show today, speaking of a mess, I had no problem getting in. Chris, you? Any traffic trouble?
None whatsoever.
The Byward Market is a bit isolated from some of these sites where people are picketing today, but I have been told, especially around Canada Post on Heron, that it's very busy. Natalie Van Roy was out there reporting for CTV at noon, and because of the picket line, the traffic is getting snarled. So keep that in mind if you're driving today. We're going to talk about the impact of the pandemic, because there's one study, one sociologist, that reasons the pandemic may have made Canadian youth less empathetic, meaner, increased time alone, increased time on a computer screen during the pandemic. This researcher is saying it may have made young Canadians a little bit more mean because we haven't spent as much time together. And Caitlin Mendez will join us on the show today. What do you think? Even if you don't have a teenager, even if you didn't see the impact in kids, how did it impact you? I will say for myself, I am definitely more cynical and I'm more of a homebody now than ever, which is to say I still love being out of the house and I am a social butterfly. I'm an extrovert. I'm energized by talking to other people and having conversations every day. Hey, maybe that's why I chose to be in broadcast, to have these chats with you all day on the phone and on the text board and to meet new people. I'm energized by being out of the house. So I was so happy to come back to work over a year ago now, last March. But now more than ever, Chris, I notice I need a little bit more time to recharge. Whereas before, I was go, 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 out of the house every day, get home at 9 p.m. I still do that. But on a weekend, rather than having back-to-back social engagements, sometimes I need a little chill. I need to take a step back, recalibrate, recharge before I jump back into the game. And that's new for me because I usually have no off switch. I'm kind of like the Energizer Bunny. There was something about the pandemic and all of that time at home in our little unit, in our little bubble with Drake and I and the dogs that made me just a little bit less social. And I need that downtime more than ever before. How about you? I think I'm a little bit more cynical as well. I like to believe the best in people, but often now I don't. I've always been a cynic, and that healthy skepticism has been, shall we say, beefed up. Weigh in on the text board. It's a bit of a personal question today. How has it changed your worldview or your mindset or maybe your temperament? Maybe you're a little bit more patient with your kids. Maybe it's a good thing because you spent so much time at home and now that the kids are back to school and you're back at work and everybody's in their normal routine, you're getting the alone time that you need to be a better parent. It may not be a bad thing, but let me know how it's changed you. We'll talk about that on the show. We will also debate LRT. I just got a rant for a second off the top on LRT. Because I have a couple of thoughts on what we heard yesterday. The entire time I was sitting there wondering, when are we getting the action plan? City briefings are not known for being scintillating. They're not supposed to be sexy. They're not supposed to be punchy. but they are supposed to be informative. And I personally don't think we learn very much. When you come out and you say, we're going to give you an action plan, I want to feel the momentum. There should be something concrete and tangible. And instead, yesterday, 5 months after the release of the damning LRT report, I heard very few details on how we're going to fix the system. They did put up an action plan online, and there were some promising signs. For example, the report that came out on the LRT on what we need to do laid out 103 recommendations. So far, 36 have been implemented, or they've been planned, as in they've been put into a city policy to be implemented. Okay, that's a start. They're pledging to implement all of them by the end of the year. Good. But we still don't know the cause of one of the derailments. And don't forget, there were two. In August 2021, a wheel broke off an axle. We still don't have a firm answer as to why. One of the theories that's been floated out there, suggesting that it was because of the way the wheels and the rail interact. But we still don't know. There's still no definitive root cause of that one derailment, and that's a big deal. The LRT inquiry report called that out. It said we still have to fix our wheel and track problems. We still have to figure out why the wheels of the vehicles have problems interacting with the rail. And it even said the solution might be to rip up the tracks. So do we have to? The city and RTG say not yet. And the mayor on his part said if we have to, we will. But right now we're looking at other solutions. And right now they said yesterday we're going to focus on grinding the tracks. Does that sound like a permanent solution to you? Sounds like a band-aid fix for a system that was built incorrectly. So we still don't have a conclusion. We still don't have a full-time, long-term, permanent solution. So forgive me when I hear officials saying, this rail system has its challenges. Come on. That's not a challenge. That's potentially a major flaw. Reports in the past have showed that the design of the track is causing excess stress to the train parts. We've got sharp curves, and you notice there are always issues in the eastern portion. Too much friction, too much stress, too much wear and tear on the parts of the train because of the way we built this. Will the grinding solve that? We're not sure. We're not sure. We're not certain. We also learned the system has to be shut down for significant maintenance in June. In addition to the planned shutdowns at the end of this month and the beginning of next month, now we get a shutdown in June. The head of OC Transpo suggested there could be line closures, there could be a single track shutdown, but no details yet. And that shutdown is due to water in the tunnel. I don't know about you, but more and more, the shutdown is sounding less like regular maintenance. Because when you say, I'm maintaining something, like you think about maintaining parts of your house or a vehicle, it's to suggest that you're keeping it up, you're keeping it in shape, you're maintaining the previous condition that it was in. This doesn't sound like maintaining. It sounds like a shoddy system that was built improperly in the first place.
Regular maintenance would probably, I don't know, kind of lead you to think that this would be something that you'd be able to do overnight, just maybe once or twice.
Maintaining is keeping up.
Right.
This is fixing a problem that has been there from the start retroactively with the water, in my opinion. You can text into the show and let me know. I got my head out the sunroof. I'm blasting our favorite tunes. I only got one thing on my mind. You got me stuck on.
Join the conversation on Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron. Text 580-580 right now.
Q23, welcome back. I asked about how your mood, your framing, the way you look at the world has changed because of COVID, your personality. Caroline in Embrun says, I have more of a short fuse for people and their hooey, their BS. Yeah, I get that. I think there's a baseline of exhaustion that a lot of people feel. Whereas before, it would take you a long time to hit that burnout level. Now we've just been through so much as a society, especially in the city of Ottawa, dealing with all of the other things that we've dealt with. I mean, today we're talking about PSAC and the strike, but, you know, for 2 years, work from home was a mandated thing. People were working from home because of COVID-19. We went through COVID-19. We went through the war in Ukraine. We're still going through that. We're facing inflation every single day, which is grinding us down, and people feel exhausted. We've also, in the city of Ottawa, gone through tornadoes, floods. We're talking about floods again today. I feel for those people, Chris. I think about how much they've gone through. It was a long, hard day of sandbagging yesterday for people that live along the river in our region, filling the bags, hauling them into place. Even though the flooding isn't expected to be as bad as 2017, many homeowners in Constance Bay and Cumberland are preparing for the worst because they know how bad it can be, because they lived through it. And so they're sandbagging, many of them, because they would just rather be prepared. They know things can quickly shift. But we are keeping our eye on the water table rising along the Ottawa River for many waterfront residents, including on Morris Island in rural West Ottawa. Thousands of residents may be at risk. Here's one of the city councillors who's representing an area, Clark Kelly.
So to give you an idea, in 2019, the water came up over this wall here. 2017 was about here. So that's why we've got the sandbags here, because we're preparing. Although they're calling for something less than what we got in 2017, I think people are comfortable preparing for that level. As you can see, the waves coming in are quite strong, and it's not just the water. It's also the wind and the waves that's created because of it, and that can really do damage to these sandbag walls.
He represents West Carlton March, which has in it Constance Bay, Wallola Beach. Those are vulnerable areas. Meantime, residents in Cumberland are facing their third flood in the last 4 years. There's a marker set up on Boise Lane to measure the levels, and it shows the water has come up. Suzanne Currier is a waterfront resident in Cumberland. She spoke to CTV Ottawa yesterday, saying they're doing all the preparations they can.
I have the Bay McLaren in the back coming faster than actually the Ottawa River. I've been pumping my basement, my well, since last week. So our peak really will be Thursday night. This year, we don't have a lot of help because people are fed up.
Mayor Mark Sutcliffe was on CTV Morning Live earlier today. He said the latest information the city has at this point is that the flood levels will not rise to the same levels as they did in 2017 and 2019.
We are preparing to be ready for that in any event, right? So to be ready, even if it goes beyond what's expected. The city has put a lot of preparation into this. We've been communicating with residents on a regular basis. There's a lot of information on the city's website at ottawa.ca. So people who are worried about flooding can consult the website for more information.
He said resources are available to residents, and it's a team effort between the mayor and the city councillors as well. I want to mention today there's a bunch of high school students that are out in West Carlton March that are helping to sandbag. The mayor says it's great to see.
We've made sandbags available at something like 20 different locations. I've been in regular contact with the city councillors in the affected areas, and my office has as well. So we're doing everything we can to prepare for what might happen in the next couple of days. But we're optimistic at this point that it won't be as bad as 2017 or 2019.
We do have many residents joining us on the show today. If you're impacted by the potential of flooding, or better yet, if you're trying to get people together and you're trying to get volunteers because you need them in your community, let us know. 580-580. We'd love to be a sounding board for that. We'd love to let people know how they can contact you, where they can meet up, where they can go. 580-580 is our text board. You're 2 minutes away from your 2:30 news.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
What do we want?
A fair contract!
What do we want? It?
No!
We need to fight for our rights. We need to fight for wages.
We are just still back in our 2021 income, so it's definitely not up to where it should be.
That's the sound of the picket lines. They're up across Canada on day two of the public servant strike. This is PSAC, the Public Service Alliance of Canada, that is striking, one of the largest unions and one of the largest strikes by public servants in Canadian history. For 2 years now, the workers have been without a contract. Now they're putting pressure on the government. There are two groups that are striking: 35,000 workers at Canada Revenue Agency and a larger Treasury Board group of more than 120,000 workers across many government departments. And Canadians are going to feel this. It's early days right now. Hopefully, it doesn't drag on too long. I don't suspect that it will, but the longer this goes, the more the impact starts to impact Canadians on passports, on, you know, moving through regular things in your regular day, like filing your taxes. If you have a question for a CRA employee on the phone, the union is demanding a wage increase that keeps up with inflation and flexibility on remote work. They want to discuss it further. So far today, no official update on how the talks are going. Mona Forte, who's the Treasury Board president, was on our national radio show chatting with Vashi Kapelos. She pointed out that the mediator identified a few months ago an offer of 3% over 3 years cumulatively, mounting to 9%. So she's asking, why the wait until this weekend to make an offer?
So first, the Public Interest Commission, as you know, reported and recommended that the place to go for wages would be at 9% for 3 years. And that is what we tabled and are working on. Hopefully, I believe, actually, it is a competitive and fair deal and also reasonable to Canadians. And that's what we're working on right now as we speak.
Pardon me, that was actually yesterday. They aired that during our national radio show, but it was taped yesterday. And that's important because, as you know, in any labor negotiations, when there's labor strife, it's very much minute by minute, hour by hour. So that's what she was saying last night. Vashi pressed her further. And Mona Forte said she's confident there will be a resolution since the government, she says, is coming to the table with a fair offer.
Well, again, I won't go into the details of how negotiations are happening. That is something that is done at the table. I do have to say, though, that I believe we have a competitive and fair wages deal on the table right now. And it's reasonable for Canadians. I'm hopeful that we can have a continuous conversation with the union to be able to get to a deal.
But if they made this fair offer, she was pressed by Vashi, why didn't you make it earlier? Do you regret not making this offer, which you say is fair, earlier?
We are continuing at the table, putting all the efforts in to get to a competitive, fair deal, and also that is reasonable to Canadians. In the meantime, I know that Canadians that are watching are, of course, worried about the current services. It's not going to be business as usual. We are having some essential services being delivered, EI, for example, veterans income support, the Canada Child Benefit, but other services will be disrupted.
Okay, so now she's going into her talking points and it gets a little less interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall today to hear what they're talking about, to see how it's going, but of course that is not possible. And the union keeps saying we're not going to negotiate in the media. But let's bring on our next guest to get his take. Barry Eidlin is on the line, associate professor in the Department of Sociology at McGill. He's an expert on labor and social movements. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chrissy. Thanks for having me.
What's your sense, and this is just based on what they're saying in the media and in the public, of how things are going so far?
Well, so far what we've seen is an impressive show of force from the union with the pickets they've been throwing up. It was sort of an open question whether, you know, this workforce that has been a lot of them have been working from home and they've been atomized from each other, whether they would actually sort of show up, and they certainly have. So those pictures have been pretty impressive. I think the message is pretty simple. I mean, I think that they basically are fighting for a wage increase that keeps up with inflation. The government's proposals are basically asking workers to take an effective wage cut. Canadians see what things are costing at the grocery store these days. I don't think you don't need to be a mathematician or an accountant to see that that math doesn't really add up.
I was reading a piece in the Ottawa Citizen this morning where they went to the picket lines and they were talking to people, and they sort of described the picket lines as a bit stagnant, not as celebratory, not as passionate as you might expect. They described a workforce that was essentially showing up because they had to get the strike pay, but that it seemed like their heart wasn't fully in it. I've heard from some public servants in my day-to-day on the text board who are there, they're striking, they do want to work from home, they want more flexibility, and they want better pay, but they don't really want to be on strike. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think anybody wants to be on strike, right? I mean, I think we need to keep this in mind that, you know, striking is hard, and you know, it you know, that they're giving up their pay, they're being out there on the picket lines. It's a last resort for the union after, you know, 2 years of foot dragging, right? And so I think this is sort of a necessary step given the intransigence that has been at the bargaining table. And so this is sort of what is oftentimes necessary to get things moving and get to an agreement.
The federal government and Mona Forte at Treasury Board first said, we don't want a one-size-fits-all approach for the hybrid work model. We're not going to do that. And then they did an about face and they came out and they said, actually, everybody needs to be in 2 to 3 days a week. After that, subsequently, they did have some caveats. Okay, people in the IT department don't have to come in. Okay, here's another branch of government. We're going to supervise them and see how it goes for the next year because we don't know what is the most efficient. Do you think that has opened the door for the government to soften on this mandate that public servants have to be back in 2 to 3 times a week?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this really just shows the importance of why you need to negotiate stuff like this, right? I mean, employers often tout these days their flexible work benefits and so on and so forth. And what we're seeing is, you know, with these mandates is that it often ends up to be, the question is flexibility for whom? And oftentimes it ends up being flexibility on the employer's terms. And what the union is fighting for is basically that, you know, it isn't one size fits all. And that's why you need to negotiate. And you need to negotiate with the people who know the work best, which is the actual workers.
Appreciate the time today. Before I let you go, what's your sense on how long you think this will go on for?
That's a tough one. I mean, I think
it is.
In your segment there, it was saying it was one of the largest in the public sector. It's one of the largest strikes, period, in human history. The strike, by comparison, the total number of people who were on strike in the United States, a country with 10 times the population, was about 120,000 workers. So just this one strike, just to give you that sense of the magnitude, is eclipsing that number. So, I mean, I think that it's hard for these essential services to, you know, be disrupted for this long. And so my sense is that the government will have to, you know, come to the table and come out with an agreement. What I'm hoping doesn't happen is that the government resorts to back to work legislation to try to short circuit the collective bargaining process. That would not be the way to go for the government.
I really enjoyed talking about this with you, Barry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christy. Take care.
Barry Eidlin, who's an expert on labor and social movements, joining us from McGill. A few text messages that are rolling in here on the board right now. Diane says it's the union that is not being fair. They should concentrate on their employees. They always talk about Canadians and how they're doing this for Canadians. Talk about the salaries of the employees that aren't making that much. Hey, that's a good point. Because I've seen some cheeky responses from texters and listeners and viewers to CTV who say, oh, really? Stop saying this is about me. This is about your wages. The union has argued if we get a pay increase, if our wages keep up with the rate of inflation, then that sets a benchmark. Then, you know, municipal employees, let's say at the city of Ottawa, you know, the city's watching this closely, then what is it going to mean for them? Well, they've got to come on up too. But many Canadians are skeptical about that that's going to translate into any wins for them in their workplace. So Diane says, keep it about you and talk about the people who need to make more money. Emphasize that. Interesting feedback, and I tend to agree with you. Another texter here said, I just chatted with a friend the other day. My best friend, who's been a federal employee for 15 years, had a good chat for an hour. His take, anecdotally, of his office and colleagues is what you've been saying, that wages aren't the top issue. It's working from home. They want the freedom to work from home. His example is telling. His office is out of Ottawa, but since COVID, works from Toronto so he can take care of his mother and doesn't care about pay, but it's more not having to move back. 2:49. Turn up the music. Turn down.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
What did we get out of that briefing yesterday on LRT? Two things. One was a so-called action plan on how they're going to fix the Confederation Line. You've already heard my big, long rant about that at the outset of the show. Light on details and not much of an action plan with very few answers, firm answers. As I mentioned, we still don't know the cause of one of the derailments, the one in August 2021. The LRT inquiry report called this out. It said we have to fix our wheel and track problem. And the mayor was asked about that. I believe we have the clip of Mayor Mark Sutcliffe speaking to CTV Ottawa. He was asked, do we need to rip up the tracks to fix this problem? And what he said was, not yet. Right now, we're going to keep it in mind. We know that it's an option. But right now, we're not jumping to it. We're not yet there at this moment. Okay, we don't have that clip. But I am going to bring on Laura Schantz, who's joining us from Ottawa Transit Riders. Great to have you back on the show.
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
The other thing we learned yesterday is that there's an additional LRT shutdown. We knew that because they had been alluding to it last week, that there was going to be something in June. But yesterday, for the first time, I heard them call it significant maintenance. What's your take on that?
You know, significant maintenance is like, it lets me know that there's a lot going on here. We know from the Hurricane Report that this train is basically on the regular being severely stress tested, and the need for significant maintenance. You know, I don't like to hear the word significant used with a system this new, I'll be honest. I would really love to hear that this is routine maintenance, but it begs the question of, you know, that stress testing that Justice Horgan brought up again and again. Are we pushing this system too hard? Are we setting ourselves up for the need for significant ongoing maintenance?
Here's that clip of the mayor.
I'll support whatever it takes to fix the light rail system. I'm not sure if it's going to come to that. Mm-hmm. I think there are parts of the line that are running pretty smoothly on a regular basis, and there are other parts where there have been some issues, and maybe that's where we need to focus our attention. Right. I know the team at OC Transpo and the external consultants that we've brought in who have experience with these kinds of problems all over the world are providing the best advice possible and giving us solutions that we can implement to make the service better.
So it's kind of like, Laura, a wait-and-see approach. We're going to grind the rails, and then we'll see how that goes. Are you satisfied with that?
You know, I'd really love to hear more details. Like, for example, what is criteria? Like, at what point do we say, no, it's time that we actually rethink? Do the rails need to be reset, realigned? I want to know what criteria we're using and when we plan to pull the trigger either on keeping with what we've got or making a change. I want to hear a lot more specific details.
I'd also like to hear some more specific details on the June shutdown. How long is it going to last? And is it really routine maintenance? Is this a problem with the water that can be fixed right away? Or is this a flaw that was a problem right from the very beginning?
Absolutely. I think riders really need that confidence of knowing what is planned for the maintenance. And as the maintenance is ongoing, we also would love to see a little more communication about what's happening, what they're finding. I know people don't like to do that in the middle of a project because, you know, bad press and whatnot if it comes up. But it's really important for riders to understand if the delay ends up taking or if the shutdown takes longer than they expect. If they have a bit of a heads up, people can be a lot more good-natured, can be a lot more patient about finding their way around instead of it being a huge surprise at the end. Nobody likes bad surprises, so let's keep the information flowing.
So I pointed out to you some of my concerns. The June shutdown, also the lack of an answer on what happened with one of the derailments, what's going to happen with the tracks and the wheels, is that ever going to be fixed? Is there anything else right now, Laura, that is weighing on your mind?
You know, those are the main issues that come up for me as well. I think it's really just the lack of clarity on this plan. I really like specific details. I really want to be properly informed. I think a lot of the public, especially people who regularly use transit, want that kind of information so they know what's going on, because we hear time and time again, the mayor says it, the councillors say it, OC Transpo says it, that riders are their number one priority. Yet when we don't see that level of information sharing that we're looking for, it really begs the question of if that's true or not.
Every single time there's a problem in the East End, I think about the report which said the parts of the train are undergoing more stress and more wear and tear than they should be. And I wonder if that's the cause.
Absolutely. It begs a huge question. We know from that Hourigan report that the trains are literally being stress tested all the time, that the specifications they were built to, they're being pushed to their max quite regularly. We know that's why we still have really slow speeds in some of those curves in the east end of the track. And, you know, I respect Mark Sutcliffe saying that, you know, parts of the track are, you know, parts of the system are running well. Great. Perfect. But there's a lot of us riders who need to ride the parts that don't always work well. So it's not good enough to just say, well, parts of it are doing well. We need the whole system to do well and work well if we want people to be confident in taking the train.
Thanks, Laura.
My pleasure.
Laura Shantz, who's a board member with Ottawa Transit Riders. It is 3 p.m. We'll take a short break. Graham Richardson is standing by right now with your 3 p.m. news.